We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
All right, joining the podcast are the hosts of George's Box, JJ and Nick. You guys have a season under your belt, not the season, Nick, that you probably thought of when you were signing up to do the podcast. But I've been listening all year. I've been enjoying it. My favorite part is just JJ learning how much of a... Nick, you're like a 13-year-old baseball fan, and it kind of warms my heart. And then every time like JJ learns that for another time, he gets excited about it. So that's been my most favorite dynamic of the show this year.
You get to hear his live reaction.
Yeah.
We talk after every episode that like Nick is like, oh, I feel better now. Like, especially when things aren't going good. Like, it's become his therapy. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think just being older and having a kid with like everything going on in the world, pandemic, politics, all that stuff, he has like, he will ground me back. Like, he'll pull me away from only worrying about that shit.
Right, right.
To just like having that blind, like, I don't know, man, the fucking Yankees are sick.
Well, no, I mean, it is hard. That was one of the questions I wanted to talk about is like, do you care as much this year? And I don't. And I don't think you do either, JJ, but Nick, you do.
I care arguably more just because, look, I've had COVID. I wasn't able to go to any games just like everybody else.
We have
been through so much, man. We've been through so much trying to grind towards 28. I mean, last year, 2017, even going back to 2012, 2010, a lot of tough eliminations. We've been grinding so hard to get to 28, and I just can't think about anything else. And to see them holding up the trophy in Texas, that would be everything for me, even if I can't be there.
I never thought that was going to start with, I had COVID.
That's the best way it could have started.
Just like, I lived through 9/11. We all did.
Put it on the table. But they've been, and think about everything that they've had to grind through, the travel schedule,
yeah,
obviously
I know,
all the injuries we've had.
Well, the injuries are, I mean, that's like a whole other thing. Like, I think we learned this year that next man up just doesn't work every year. And I think it's unrealistic to think it would work every year.
Thank you.
Opening night. Gerrit Cole pitching in DC. I was amped up. Definitely. No question about it. That was awesome. And since then, it has just been downhill for my excitement. And I don't know if it's because the team went through more injuries and it's like, well, shit, same shit, different day with this team. Like, I'm sick of watching Mike Talkman and I'm sick of watching Tyler Wade. I want to watch Aaron Judge and I want to watch Giancarlo Stanton. Or if it's just like JJ's talking about. And it kind of sounds stupid. Like, there's other shit going on in the world. There's always other shit going on in the world. In any baseball season, there's real shit going on in the world. And baseball's meant to be a distraction. I don't know, for whatever reason this year, it's been harder to enjoy that distraction. And I can't quite pinpoint it.
I think also not having the games to go to. Like,
that's a big thing for me, too.
It's also a motivator. Like, I think we've done a good job with our show this year, but it's a motivator. Like, we had a lot of other content planned. Like, we had a ton of other things to,
you guys were supposed to be in Baltimore opening weekend, and like the events are always like a nice milestone to look forward to each month. Even sometimes, like, I'll just decide on a Tuesday night, like, oh, the tickets are $10, let me go. And I think the excitement level not being able to go, like, I don't care if it's Tuesday night against the freaking Seattle Mariners. Like, I walk into Yankee Stadium and I get excited.
Yeah. And even, you know, at the end of a work week, you know, if you're having like a shitty week at work or 2 weeks or whatever, when the outside stuff is going on that happens every year, you're like, all right, well, like Saturday we have an event, or Friday a couple of us are going to the game, Saturday we have an event, I got a hotel in New York for the weekend. Yeah. Like, you have like these things to look forward to. It's, you know, for you, it's a quick train ride. For Nick and I, like, we have to drive now, but I used to be on the Upper East Side where it was just like, I don't know, I have a vacation 15 minutes away from me, even if it's just for 3 hours.
Yeah.
It's the little things too, though. Like, for me, it's getting out of Penn Station and just being in New York City and seeing the Yankee caps. And it's like, it's fucking go time.
Getting out of Penn Station is always great.
Exciting. Or getting out of the subway and you're in the Bronx.
Yeah.
When you get into the Bronx and you see everybody on the side of the street selling peanuts, selling knockoff jerseys, like, I do miss, you know, the smells, the sounds, and all that stuff. Not as much as I thought, but
yeah, I mean, it's corny to say, but you walk out of the subway tunnel, like I take the D train to get to the stadium. You walk up, and it's just like you feel like a buzz, even like just people at the bar, people drinking, vendors selling stuff, just like a buzz around the stadium. That's exciting. That obviously is not there this year. All we can do is watch on TV. But I turn it on every night. I'm always going to watch. I'm rooting for them to win. But it's just like, okay, I got like Paul O'Neill sitting in his basement, and I got Michael Kay and David Cohn like sitting in the dark. And it's just like baseball more than any other sport, I think, is suffering from a TV standpoint of no fans, because like any foul ball, any fly ball, anything like that, you see the empty stands where it's like, you watch a football game right now and there's no one there. Or I mean, some stadiums have fans. Freaking Jerry Jones is going to pack that place by the end of the year. But like, you don't really see the stands. And I think baseball is suffering from an environment standpoint. It's like, it just, you know, it's empty.
Yeah, no, definitely. And especially even during the slow parts of a game where you might see two people fighting over a foul ball. If it's a 10-2 game, like that little stuff that kind of entertains you, you know, you're all out on that. So it's been brutal with the no fans. I'm glad we're not doing the cutouts though. I think that looks corny as hell.
Dude's doing like, you know, there'll be like a guy who falls asleep, or, you know, and they'll just go on about that guy for, and you remember a guy like sued like 6 years ago who kind of looked like me. Just like a fat guy sleeping.
He was on like Sunday Night Baseball. Wasn't that Sunday Night Baseball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it got like kind of mean. Yeah, I mean, O'Neill in the basement has been funny at times. Like, it's been like, all right, we're making the best of a situation. Sure. Or he's just been kind of playing it fast and loose, which is like just FaceTime and Posada and not telling him, hey, by the way, like you're on TV.
Outing him that he lied about his age.
Is great. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like all that stuff has been like fun. They're making the best of a bad situation. But I think also once the Marlins thing happened very early in the season,
yeah,
there was a lot of like, is any of this for anything?
Right.
You know? And then when it impacted us, not that we, you know, from a losing player standpoint, but like we had games that, you know, aren't being played and then they're being played and we're in Philly, but we're going to Baltimore. And just like, I don't even know what time the games are. I have no idea who's pitching. Like,
no, yeah.
If I didn't have an Apple Watch, like I got an Apple Watch right before the season, and the only thing I get sent to me is text messages and Yankee notifications. Like everything else is turned off. I don't need, like, you know, my emails coming to it. I need that to remind me, like, when they're playing, because also it's like, oh, some nights it's 7:30, some it's 6:30, some it's 7:05.
Right.
And they're making adjustments on the fly with the rain delays, changing the stadium, changing the time. But that first weekend with the Marlins was probably the darkest time for me. I was like, we just waited 6 months for this to start. There's one outbreak on one team and this whole thing is going to come crumbling down.
Yeah.
That was a dark time, but I just kept the blind faith and really relieved we got through it.
Yeah, I thought it was going to have to get canceled. I didn't see how they were going to, and then the Cardinals thing happened. And it's like, and part of it is also, And we'll talk about the rules in a second, but not everyone's in agreement on like, is this a legitimate season? And I think that's also a factor in excitement levels, because not only do you have a 60-game season, which is unprecedented, you have 7-inning doubleheaders, which has never happened before. You have a new extra inning rule. You have teams that aren't going to all play the same amount of games because of COVID. You have 8 out of 15 in each league making the playoffs, which is freaking ridiculous. Like, you can't have more than half the league make the playoffs. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So there's too many new things this year that I think it's causing some people to be like, yeah, whatever, screw it, I don't care.
I got hit. I'll check in on the first. Like, I'll be here for the playoffs. Like, I'm here, but I'm watching the games. We talked about it this week on our show. I don't tweet as much during the games. A lot of times it's on, I'll be honest, like it's on the backup, you know, it's on a smaller TV. It's on a laptop. It's on my phone.
Do you think though that's, it's 100% COVID season related, or is it because like now you have a daughter who's like 6 months old at this point, or 8 months old, 10 months old at this point. I was trying to figure out the math there.
10 years old. We have a
10 years old. She's going to college soon.
Not good. It's not good. It's a Jack situation.
Do you think it's like other life factors? And if 2020 was a regular season anyway, you would have lost a little interest, or this is 100% COVID related?
It's 100% COVID, because like, I think there, I don't know what percentage my attention is away. There would have been some, because sure. I have a kid. Like, I wouldn't have made it to 20 games from Philly.
Right.
But I still would have gone to, I don't know, 12. Like, I would have made it happen. But yeah, it's a COVID, like, things being all over the place, uncertainty with everything else in the world. Like, you know, and I just like going to baseball games a lot.
You have the people like you guys that are like, everything's different, so we're not sure if this is legitimate. But then you have people like me that are like, look, every team's in the same boat. This is going to be a shit show for everybody. So whoever's holding up that trophy at the end of the year, for me, it's legitimate.
No, I'm with you, Nick. Like, I agree. This championship is legitimate. But I think when not everyone is in agreement, it takes something away from it. Even for me, even if I think it's legitimate, if I can't then be in a room with 20 people and those 20 people all be like, yep, those are the world champions right there, then it takes something away from it.
See, that's, I think we'll be the world champions, just not the World Series champions. It's just a different thing. We're just 2020 champions.
27, 28 and a half?
Yeah. I mean, I want 27 and then this other thing.
If, like, somebody comes up to me and says 27 and a half, I'm punching them in the face. Well, if you know, win, those, this is 28.
You know, if the Yankees win, like, the Red Sox, the Rays are making those t-shirts, 27, 20, like, that's...
Oh, God, I didn't even think of
they're
that.
They're selling them on Yahoo. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of the Yankee hater hat, which is the stupidest fucking hat I've ever seen in my life, there's going to be 27 and a half. You know what it is.
That's painful to think about.
So I want to talk about the extra inning rule, because you guys both hate it. And it's my new favorite rule, because that, and I use the Friday night Boston game as an example. That was a very exciting game. That was maybe the most exciting back and forth game of the season.
Where needed six, maybe seven more innings.
but you had the grind. You had, even if you scored a run in the top of the inning as the away team, you're not relaxing. You're like, oh crap, they're starting with a runner on second base. You're instantly on edge every inning. Whereas I find too many extra inning games recently, especially with the trends in baseball, it's just like, someone will hit a solo home run eventually. Let's just hope it's us. And I can't stand that. After nine innings of that, I don't want to watch another five innings of that.
We're good at hitting those solo homers, though. And look, our closer is Aroldis Chapman. He walks a ton of people. He always has people on base. I don't need extra people on base when Chappie has a one-run lead. So for me, I don't like it.
But you're thinking about it in the context of this Yankees team instead of like a broader baseball context.
That's how I think about everything in life, is in the context of this Yankees team, of course.
All right. Well, I think, you know, I mean, I don't think the seven-inning doubleheaders are going to stay, because I mean, that's just not real baseball. But I could see them keeping this rule.
Ah, man, I really hope not.
Not for the playoffs, though. We're not going to get it in the playoffs. So it's like the NHL has different rules in overtime and regular season. They do a shootout. And then in the playoffs, they do overtime. So in baseball...
They're the sport no one cares about. You're just like, oh, here's the fourth place sport.
NFL does ties, okay? And then in the postseason, they don't do ties. Every sport does it to speed shit up. Because if you're doing 162 games, we don't need 18 innings. We don't.
Your example from football was also their dumbest rule. Like, that's, and nobody, there's not a single person who goes, oh, good thing they have ties in football so we can get out of here.
I mean, but physically.
You're citing the Friday night game. Didn't the Friday night game go like 14 innings, 13, 14 innings?
Yeah, but that's even an aberration in extra innings. I think there was some stats like, it was like 70% end by the 10th inning, and then like 88 or like over 90% end by the 11th inning.
But, like, it's free baseball. And if you're tired, just go to sleep or turn it off or go home. Like,
that's not possible. I can't do that. Okay?
Well, I mean, then you have a problem. Like, that's your issue.
I have a problem.
Because the same thing, there's no point in whether you go to sleep or stay up where they make you that guy on second base. They don't need you. It'll be all right if you got a shit going on.
I'm aware of all of this. But I can't go to bed not knowing the result of a baseball. West Coast games aside, because I won't stay up for West Coast games when I have to go to work. I'm too fucking old for that. West Coast games aside, I will not go to bed until I know the result of a baseball game.
But do we want to, with all this pace of play stuff, because this leads into the pace of play conversation, the extra innings thing, do we want to conform to the borderline people that don't, that aren't diehard baseball fans and just want to see a quicker game? Or do you want to cater to the people like us that that love baseball and are cool with watching 14, 15, 16 inning games every once in a while? It's not like they're playing 18 inning games.
No, this is not about pace of play. This extra inning rule does nothing for pace of play. Pace of play is the fact that nothing happens in baseball games anymore. It's all strikeouts, walks, and home runs. Like a the games are still just over 3 hours. They were just over 3 hours 20 years ago, but a lot of stuff happened in those 3 hours. Now nothing happens in the 3 hours. That's the problem with baseball.
Yeah, walk, strike out, homer.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they could do things to fix that. Like Scott and I have talked about eliminating the shift, and then you're going to change a lot of hitters' mentalities. And you've got, instead of Aaron Hicks just hitting 114 mile an hour rockets to the second baseman playing shallow right field, those will be base hits.
Why wouldn't you just go the other way?
Because he's like, incapable. He's not capable.
Well, then, you know, you can't shift against is DJ LeMahieu.
Exactly.
Having these shifts make guys like him, I mean, the basketball term would be unguardable, but unplayable. A guy like DJ that can hit to all fields. Like for a guy like Teixeira or Ryan Howard or any of those guys, like learn how to go the other way. I don't have any sympathy for hitters with the shift.
But what about for like the data analytics people who tell these hitters, no, we don't want you hitting a single to the opposite field. We want you hitting a home run. Like, so maximize that opportunity, because that's what it's all about.
That's how they choose to run their team. Like, you know, whatever you think's going to win. But what are you going to say? Like, oh, you can only go, you know, this far over. Like, you're going to
Get so ticky tacky at that point. Like, oh, he stepped over the line.
No, it's just like anything else. There's a blue line in hockey. You can't enter the.
What is hockey, man? None of us like hockey.
And NBA. I don't even know the rule in NBA. You can't enter the paint before, like,
you can't stay in the paint for more than 3 seconds.
So as the second baseman, you can't be to the right of second base before the pitch is thrown, and vice versa for the shortstop.
I don't like it.
But that's on offense.
Huh?
Like on offense in the NBA, you can't stay in the paint.
Oh, whatever. I just think
defense, you could play zone defense.
You know, I just think that for baseball, it would achieve, if they are truly serious about more action in the games, that would help achieve it.
I mean, more action would make the games longer.
Not necessarily. The games weren't longer 20 years ago and there was more action.
But the game evolves. I mean, how much are you going to do? They're going to shift. And then people eventually might learn how to beat the shift. You could go back to all the changes that baseball's made over the years, but the game's going to evolve. Now we're in the homer strikeout era, but you could see it going back and swinging back in the other direction to make guys like DJ more valuable, not the homer bust guys that go to all fields.
Yeah, maybe it's just time, and like we're in the middle of it, so it doesn't feel like it's changing, but maybe it's changing slowly but surely, and we'll look back in 15 years and it will have changed. But 15 years is a long time from now, Nick.
You're right. We better have 28 by then or I'll be off a bridge.
Speaking of homer strikeouts,
I mean, game time 8 years ago went to 3 hours.
Yeah.
Before that, it was under 3 hours.
Okay.
I mean, it was like right around 3 hours.
Yeah, 255, 257.
I mean, and that's the thing. They're just trying to get back to that. Like, that's what makes it stupid. Like, it was 310 last year. Or no, sorry. It was 305 last year.
This year is the longest ever, 307.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, well, we're trying to save 7 minutes off? Who gives
a
shit?
Yeah, like, no, exactly. No. See, that's what I said at the beginning. Like, 255 to 307 really isn't that big of a difference. But if it's an action-packed 307, that feels different than a lame 307. And I feel like there's too many lame 307s now. You have like 3-1 games taking 3 hours and 10 minutes because there's 19 pitching changes and 15 walks and 4 solo home runs.
You could also,
especially with us too.
Yeah.
If you just you could cut these down by just cutting down commercial breaks.
Yeah, but I mean, that
doesn't work.
They're not going to do that because that gives up
revenue.
Throw
a fucking patch on everyone's jersey. I'll see a patch on a jersey to get 20 minutes back.
I could have Aaron Judge out there draped like a NASCAR. Okay, I don't care, but they're
but
not going to.
He's on the IL, so.
But then, no, so you can't see him. But even once they add the patches on the jersey, they're not going to be like, okay, we'll give back commercial time. It's going to be commercial time plus the patches.
Yeah, they just want more revenue. They're never going to say, hey, we don't need this revenue.
Exactly.
Well, if you want. You need audience to dictate media prices.
So that brings me to Judge, and JJ's one of his more polarizing ideas on the show, on your guys' show this year, was trading Aaron Judge because the dude is always hurt. And I agree, he's injury prone. Anyone who says he's not injury prone is lying to themselves.
Well, the best argument against that that I've gotten is if you discount, if you don't count 75% of his injuries.
Sure. Yeah, the wrist injury was a fluke. What were the other ones that they say were
oblique
flukes?
Was legit. Calf was legit.
Two obliques.
He had an oblique in 16.
Yep.
Broken right. rib.
Shoulder issue from the home run derby.
Lung,
which technically didn't keep him out, but caused him to
suck. Surgery on that left shoulder. Yeah, yeah. And didn't
he have a knee at some point too? That was
he's had everything. And
had everything.
No one's denying his talent. Like when he's playing, like he's the best player on the team. So JJ, your idea is what? Sell high on Aaron Judge now?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, high is gone. We're way beyond high. Here's the thing with Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge had a tremendous 2017. No one can take that away from him. Aaron Judge in 2016 came on the scene very hot and then got injured. If you look at it, he has missed, I haven't done the calculation in a while, I would imagine it's somewhere around 73% of games he plays. And he is a monster. He is marketing. He's got all of this brand. But I think that matters to everyone except for the New York Yankees, because regardless of who's wearing the pinstripes, people are going to be there to see it. They threw up the judges' chambers in 2017 because we weren't supposed to go as far as we were. No one, it was like, maybe we'll sneak into the playoffs. We're not going to get a couple outs away from going to the World Series. So they threw that up. You get two union guys in there for like 2 hours. They rip that shit out. You give me 20 minutes, I could spray paint Frazier's chambers. It's right there.
Frazier's friend.
And he's going to get, you know, everyone, you know, people for a long time are like, we got to extend Judge. We got to extend Judge. Aaron Judge is going to become a free agent in what, 2 more years?
Uh-huh.
Two more after this year.
He's going to be 31 years old in that first year of that next contract.
Oh, yeah.
And someone's going to pay him.
Oh, yeah.
And I just don't want it to be the Yankees. And it's much easier to deal with any blowback right now than not win the World Series. He's missed a bunch of time. And then we just like walk away from it. We got nothing in return. We have no World Series.
Well, you would get a draft pick. And I know that is hard to.
We don't know if that's even going to be in play anymore.
That's a good point. But you said no one cares about the marketing. I mean, I think Steinbrenners care about the marketing. The team was not marketable in 2013, 2014.
Nobody was going.
2015.
I mean, we all remember. We all went. Nobody went those
like,
years.
Since
until 2017.
Yeah, since even it took till the very end of 2017 for the stadium to be packed every game.
I'd say we'd had under 10 sellouts a year in 16, 15. It'd be like Jeter Day, Bernie Day.
Like,
or
if you look at attendance, I bet 17 starts to spike. 18, 19 really like we're up. And I'm not saying it's all because of Aaron Judge, but I think a big part of it is because of Aaron Judge. I mean, I'd rather hang on to him
during the championship window. We have 2 more years left with him. I'd rather ride it out, ideally get a first round pick at the end of it if it stays the same. But to trade him now when we have our next 2 best years to win a championship just seems short-sighted to me.
2011, 45,100 per game. 2012, 43,700 per game. 13 was 40,500. 14 was 42,000.
Wasn't that Jeter's? That was Jeter's last year.
Yeah, that's Jeter's, yeah.
2015 was 39,400.
Then
2016's 37,800. Now 2017, you get up to about 40, 42 in 18. Or actually, 43, and then last year, about 41. So, like, yeah, he's picked it up like a nominal amount. Like, you're not talking. You're thinking about on TV. When you see the stadium half empty on a Tuesday, but those seats are sold.
Oh, I know they are.
It's the Yankees.
Yeah, of course. Of course they're sold. And that's why the attendance numbers are all bullshit.
And guess what? You don't have to worry about Aaron Judge bringing people out to the stadium because, one, he's not there a quarter of the time. And you've got Cole. We've got Glaber. Like, you've got these other guys.
You've got Stanton. Oh, wait. No, he's not there either.
but we're stuck in that contract.
No,
like,
I know.
Could get rid of the Stanton contract, I would. I'm just saying, let's not get in another Stanton contract.
Well,
for the MVP who's never won an MVP award, the Gold Glove outfielder who's never won a Gold Glove.
I agree. Don't extend him. I just don't want to trade him now. So I'm in the middle. I don't know.
Oh, Andrew, you don't want it. So I
want to ride out these 2.5 years and then whatever happens. Well,
yeah, definitely ride out the 2 years and see where
Nick doesn't break up with someone. He just stops texting.
He ghosts them.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's trying to ghost Aaron Judge.
I wouldn't trade him because you're never going to get value for him. You're never going to get the value he's actually worth because of the injury issue. And so a team's going to give you what? What are they going to get? What are you going to get for Aaron Judge that is going to make you say, wow, that was worth it, versus him hopefully playing 100 regular season games and being healthy for the playoffs? Listen, I'm with you on the fact I don't want to give this guy an 8-year contract because he's just going to be hurt for most of it. But for the next 2 seasons, hopefully he plays. Hopefully you win a World Series. And then, I don't know, see what he'll take on the free agent market. Do try and get him like you did for Cano, where it's like
15 mil a year.
I think he might take a sweetheart deal.
I mean, no, but no, he won't. But like, I'm more concerned about the years. I don't care. Pay him $30 million a year. But if it's 5 years, I'm cool with that. I don't want to give him 7-8 years.
I don't think anybody does at this point, other than the diehard 99 people. And Jack, we've talked about it, how it's like, if your favorite player ever is Aaron Judge, no, you're kind of a loser.
Yeah, like, you're a loser. I saw when I like started this whole thing, there were people like, you believe that someone out there, that I'd get tagged after someone would be like, you believe people want to like trade Aaron Judge, and someone to me. So I'd look at those responses and it'd be like a guy with a framed, not even autographed jersey with like two pictures and just like, I would cry if they traded him. Then I click on that guy's profile and it says like Rutgers alum. And I'm like, oh, you're a full on alum. You're a grown man, went to college, crying about fucking some guy you'll never meet because he's got a sweet gap tooth and you like fucking Michael Strahan. Like, what are we talking about here? If you can get anything of value, you look at that.
Anything of value, though, is going to be, it's going to be 50 cents on the dollar. That's not worth it.
I think you can get more than 50 cents on the dollar. Are you
Judge's 100 games are good enough for me, though. He's still hitting 27, 28 homers in those 100 games, playing great defense, generating around 5 WAR. His 100 games is better than most people's 140 or 150 or whatever.
And as long as we can keep paying him like $1.5 million, that's a good deal.
Well, he's making eight
this year.
Well, now
he's making 8.5, yeah.
I mean, that's still a good deal. But for Judge,
like, can he make less next year? Like an arbitration?
No, that never happens, really.
Because like he didn't earn that money this year. Like, he did not earn even that amount of money in a situation that fucks players.
So he'll play what, like 25 out of 60? Yeah, it's going to be depressing to look at.
Oh, yeah, and think about it from this standpoint. He was going to be out until July anyway with a shoulder issue, or what was it? I don't even remember, a rib injury. So he was going to play out of 162 games like 35. Yeah.
Yeah. He was going to play 40 games.
It's insane.
Make $8.5 million and then make like 12 next year.
Nick, you're right in the sense that his 100 games are better than most people's 150, but that's not going to be true when he's 33.
And you're right. And then that's why I'm not down for the extension. That's why I'm down to just ride it out. Ideally get the first round pick. And I think it's the middle ground there. I also don't think, look, if we're sitting here as Yankee fans saying we don't want to give him 8 years, I don't think there are that many other teams out there that are going to be like, yeah, we'll go to 8 or 9 years. I just don't see the market.
Didn't
for
we say that about Cano?
Yeah. And look, they gave up halfway through. And
well, I mean, but someone else still signed him.
Yeah, you know, no, you're right. That was a different market, though. That was before. I mean, I know free agency was good, but it's different now. Whereas once you hit 30, everybody's skeptical, I feel like, now.
For the like 10-year contracts, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think he's going to get a 10-year contract.
No, he's too old, yeah.
I think any contract is going to be too long because he's not going to take like a 3-year deal.
Five.
I don't think you can trade a 5-year 31 through 36 of Aaron Judge is going to be atrocious. There's no one who like hits his late 20s, early 30s, and is like, oh, now I'm healthy all the time. Unless you're just going to make him a DH, and then now we're taking away the whole Gold Glover with no Gold Glove.
We can't
make
him
a full-time DH for the next 8 years.
So, like, my thought, and obviously I didn't, like, think it, you know, I didn't you know, fully sort it all out and sort of look at it was at the time, I said, when Clevinger was available, if you can get Clevinger and Lindor and you give up Judge, Garcia, and Duhar, and like maybe you got to throw in someone else, like if they would entertain that, you can make that move. At the time, Gleyber wasn't healthy. You have flexibility in the infield with DJ, and Gleyber Torres is not a great shortstop. I still don't think Didi would have been worth what it was. He's young enough to play to learn how to play corner outfield.
You mentioned Gleyber real quick, and I'm not trying to hijack this conversation, but are we going to get to a point during a playoff game where we're bringing in a defensive replacement for Gleyber in the eighth inning? Because he's been really bad, guys.
We talked about that on our Thursday show. I mentioned that you and I were talking about that on Facebook. I don't think they will do it, but I would consider it. I don't think they'll do it because I think they like to take Voit out instead. I don't know. I feel like they're also worried about like hurting Glaber's feelings. Like seriously,
ball gets hit to him, and it's not Duhar level, but you're holding your breath a little bit for sure.
Imagine if they didn't have Gio and it was Andujar and Gleyber on the left side. That would be the worst left side of the infield ever.
I could get on base in a major league.
Would be a disaster.
And sometimes I think guys just need to they need the season to end. Like, I think he needs...
Like Clint last year.
Yeah, Clint needed that season to end so bad. He's come back. He's been great. I think Gleyber didn't know for a good part of the offseason, like, what position he was playing. So he couldn't start really, like, working on that from, like, day one. And then, you know, you just have, like, this weird offseason that's longer, but, like, can you do the things you would normally do? Let's give him another offseason to make adjustments. Hopefully the team has, you know, some kind of plan for him. But if that trade was out there, it's not like – because people were like, oh, so you move him back to second, you move DJ to first. DJ LeMay, who's the best second baseman in baseball.
Yeah,
so you don't move him anywhere unless it's an emergency. If anything, in that situation, you teach Gleyber to play first base. But I think he would have been young enough to learn how to play corner outfield.
Gleyber wasn't good at second either the last 2 years. He had bad metrics there. He might just not be a good fielder.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we don't want to admit that, but.
Right. The concerning thing is that they said, oh, he has more instincts at shortstop, but it just hasn't been shown.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah.
All right. Last thing. Nick, are you re-signing Tanaka?
Yes. 3 years and around 45 or 40 million. I'm not going crazy for him.
JJ, are you re-signing Tanaka?
What did you say? 3 years?
3 years, 45 million, I'll say.
45. Well, I would say 3 years. I think 3 years, 36 million. I tweeted that earlier today would be good. Like, I know it's the latest, you know, little war I'm fighting on Twitter because right before we did this, we recorded this on Thursday. You guys tweeted out from your podcast handle that Fangraphs war puts him at a value of $150 million. He got paid $155. So this is a great contract.
I didn't say that. I just said.
No. So you didn't say that, but you got that from Frank Marco. And that's what his dumb head was thinking because he just measures everything in war. I don't know. Maybe we're the war world.
But unfortunately, that's what the Yankees nerds are also measuring. So they look at that contract from Tanaka and they say, good job, guys. Let's pat each other on the back.
Good for them as they have no World
Series. Zero World Series rings to show for it. I agree.
So tell me, listen, his war, and I know I'm a bit of an old man about baseball, right? And I understand, wins and losses don't matter. The guy never won more than 14 games, okay? His ERA is a 3.74. His FIP is a 3.91. So he's got bailed out on defense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, what do we give him? 2 years, $17 million a year, like Hap? Like,
yeah, these are. That's what I said. I said the Hap contract. If he takes the Hap contract, then you sign him. But if he wants more than
two,
if he wants more than the Hap contract, you got to walk away. I also think they're on borrowed time with him and his arm. And he's basically had to abandon his fastball because I don't know if it's injury related or age related. The guy's 31 years old, but he's like an old ass 31 years old.
If you would have told me in mid-2014 that we would get through the 7 years without having Tommy John surgery, I would have bet anything against that.
And Tanaka has been he's been good. and he's been great in the playoffs, and you can't take that away from him. But I don't think we can just expect every year, oh, once Tanaka makes the playoffs, he's going to turn into our number one pitcher. Like, eventually, he's going to get hit in the playoffs, because guess what? He gets hit in the regular season all the time.
We were there. That was game four of the ALCS. He got smacked by the Astros. We were sitting there miserable.
In essentially, in more or less than a must-win game. I mean, you fell behind 3-1 in that series because he lost that game. And he didn't suck in that game. But so I think people overrate Tanaka because of his postseason performance. He is a mid to high 3 ERA guy who can go 5 innings. And if you can get that for 2 or 3 years, I'm cool with that. If he wants more than that, you have to walk away. Because
the last 4 years, he's an over 4 ERA guy. Like, he's not a mid to high threes. He's an over 4 ERA guy.
Okay, so let's call it a 4.
He's going to miss a couple starts a year.
Yeah, so let's call it a 4 ERA guy who can pitch 5 innings. That's a number 5 starter. They paid Jay Happ $18 million a year to be a number 5 starter.
And what I think we all agree
was
stupid. An awful contract.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
In hindsight, obviously, at the time, I mean, Tanaka, I trust Tanaka more than I trust Jay Happ. I mean, let's be fair.
Hope so. But look at next year. We're not going to bring back Paxton. Happ's probably gone. Now you guys are talking about maybe letting Tanaka go. We got to fill out 5 spots. Cole can't pitch every day. Seve won't be ready in the beginning. So you need bodies at the same time.
Well, I'm just saying at $17 million a year, there's someone else for $17 million a year. Or there's 2 people for $17 million a year who can be 5 starters, have a 4-something ERA, miss a couple starts a year and always have you worried that, like, he is, you know, he can go out there, and this is what he does, is he'll go out there and give us a 9-inning complete game, 1-2 hitter against the Mariners in late August.
Once a year.
And we'll be like, fuck yeah. And we'll forget all the times he got shelled. He is just as many of his terrible stinkers from, you know, being decent to, and him being a great starter, from those much more rare complete games being average and him being in the fucking bullpen in Milwaukee.
Well, that's
people
why
cherry pick too.
Of course they do with everything. And that's why his season stats net out to an average pitcher. And then his postseason stats, he's nutted up every season in the postseason. So I don't know what to take away from that. It's like 46 innings in the postseason. You can't call that like a large sample. So we'll see what he does this year. I don't know. I think they're going to probably re-sign him if I had to guess.
I hope they do. I just hope it's a good deal.
It's going to be tough to say. Once you figure Paxton's gone, I just don't see them letting both of them walk. It's just hard for me to envision that with not having Seve ready.
There's no such thing as pot committed. Just because you lost one bad pitcher doesn't mean you can't lose a mediocre pitcher on a bad deal. Like, if it's a good deal, if someone wants to overpay, let them overpay.
Definitely. Definitely. But you also, and Cashman, I guarantee
you're only looking at the Dodgers, right? Dodgers, maybe the Angels. Like, those are the only people who I could see him going to. Like, he's not going to Kansas City.
No, but they're not paying him $15-plus million a year anyway.
Just don't think the middle of the country has enough money. There's no one in the middle of the country.
You couldn't see like the White Sox, who are like a young up and coming team, being like, hey,
I live in Chicago.
How do you know this? Do you know him?
Yes.
How do you know where he wants to live?
Because he was the biggest star in Japan and came to America and picked to go to our biggest city with his pop star, like K-pop or whatever the hell it is, wife, because she wanted to be in New York. You don't then be like, you know what? I want to go have a casserole that they call pizza here in Chicago. No. If anything, it falls into the like stereotypical, and we've talked about this on our show. I don't even know like where it comes from, that like, well, he's from Japan, so he'll want to be in LA, as if it's like a 45-minute drive.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump home.
Overnight flight, and it's still a job where you have to be there every day because you don't get to Roger Clemens it and just show up when you're playing because you've got a 4 ERA the last 4 years.
Do you know where I think we got that? Like the first 4 Japanese players that came over all signed on the West Coast. So we're just like, they must all want to be on the West Coast. I mean, Hideki Arabu signed. He was like the third big guy to come over. And he signed with the Yankees. But everyone else was like a West Coast guy. That's got to be where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, it started because also at the time that Ichiro came over, Nintendo owned the Mariners. And, you know, like, just, I don't know, being a kid at that time where he was like, oh, I guess fucking Nintendo. Like, what are you going to, like, Super Mario negotiated the contract.
That's a fun fact.
All right. Good stuff, guys.
That's not racist. That's just being young. Like, that just as a kid.
I didn't say it was racist. I didn't say
it
was
racist.
You
gave me that, like, pause of, like, And don't forget, Hideki Irabu won two World Series.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
he did, personally.
He's dead. Rest in peace.
R.I.P. the fat toad. Can't believe Steinbrenner called him the fat toad outwardly. What a jackass.
I remember the cover of the Daily News. I was like, damn.
And I don't see Hal doing that.
I remember when he threw that no-hitter, too. Right? Didn't he throw a no-hitter?
No.
No, what? No, you know, that's not what it was. It was the...
it was like six innings, four runs.
Didn't even get a quality start.
Every game, just always. For some reason, I thought he threw a no.
No, I mean, there's been no hitters in Yankees history except like the perfect games from Cone, Wells. Doc Gooden, no hitter, yeah.
Remember Pineda almost threw one, a no hitter on the home opener? I think that was 2017.
And then obviously the Mussina one, Carl Everett.
Oh my God.
Carl Everett beat his kids. He did. He used to hit his kids. And do you know, if you sat in the bleachers at Yankee Stadium, they let him know about it.
Do you know the Yankees drafted Carl Everett in like 1991? And then they lost him to the Rule 5 draft?
Ah.
Yeah.
Fun child abuse facts.
All right. That's it for this portion of the show. The 161 boys and Scott will be up next. You guys want to leave with anything? Any parting words?
Go get 28.
I bet this is more interesting than the next segment.
Okay, great.
You guys have counted on restaurants, and now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you the food that you're craving right to your door. Ordering is extremely easy. You open the DoorDash app, you choose what you want to eat, and the food is delivered right to you safely outside your door, and you can now choose their new contactless delivery drop-off setting. I use it all the time. It's a terrific app, and there's a lot of local restaurants that you can get as well. There are way more than you expect that are included with DoorDash. Bevan and I use this app probably twice a week, so definitely recommend going on and buying it, especially with the code that we're about to give you. Many of the local restaurants are still open for delivery, so you can just use DoorDash, select from their menu, choose the food you want, and they bring it right to you, and it usually happens pretty fast, and you can track the people as they come, which is fun to know, because now you know when your food is coming exactly to the minute. So right now, all of our listeners can get $5 off and zero delivery fee with their first order of $15 or more. Just download the DoorDash app and enter code BLUEWIRE. That's $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BLUEWIRE. Don't forget, that's code BLUEWIRE for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
Guys, the wait is finally over and football is back. And you might not be at the game this year, but you could still bet on the game and on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use your promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we're doing round two of this round robin going over the Yankees' weird 2020 season. We now have some conclusion. We know what's happening. We're recording this on Sunday night about 8 o'clock after the Yankees back their ass back up into the playoffs. We're playing Cleveland. We know that much. I'm joined by the 161 boys, Luke and Damon. What's up, fellas? How you doing? Thanks for joining today.
What's going on? Thanks for having us.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday. So backing up like in true 2020 fashion, just like backing up into the playoffs, going into Cleveland. We know this. Andrew and I are going to be doing a
preview episode for the Bronx Pinstripe Show tomorrow. So you guys will all get that when Andrew and I talk to them. We're lining up some Cleveland either podcasters or beat reporters as well right now. So we should have that for you Tuesday morning. But you're going to be here in George's Box and the 161 boys tonight. Basically just reactions to the 2020 season. Andrew and I split up. Andrew spoke with those guys and I am talking to the 161 boys now. So fellas, this year's been strange. It's been obviously strange. Luke, you're studying for a massive test coming up tomorrow morning. And I know that's been taking a lot of your brain spaces as well.
Yeah, it's dedication.
It is dedication, man. I appreciate it. How are you guys feeling about 2020? Just in general, looking at what went down this whole year. Like, let's even start from the beginning and just, and give me your reactions or what your thoughts were when you heard that, you know, the games, the double headers were going to be seven innings. We had some weird extra inning rules. The season was 60. Just give me your whole, where you're going with that first and then how you think it played out.
Yeah. I mean, going into the season, I didn't really have much of an expectation at all because I just wanted baseball in any form that we could get it. So all the rules, obviously, they threw together with the seven innings and the man on second, all that. I didn't really care that much. But obviously, now that we got baseball and now we can kind of be a little more critical about it, I didn't really like the seven inning doubleheaders because for the Yankees six specifically, there's a lot of situations where we probably would have won games because we tend to put up runs late and we just didn't have enough time. And that's happened a few times I can remember. And I just don't like that you could possibly get a loss because of that. And that was one thing I didn't really like. At first, it seemed like a pretty good idea, but just to get more games in. But they didn't really get more games in. They just got the same amount of games, 60 games, just made them shorter so they could do it in the same day. They made them shorter by innings,
not by time.
Exactly. I thought the idea was to do double headers so you can squeeze in 80 or 100 games, you know?
Yeah, no, that was, I mean, they're originally doing this as well because the other thing is you didn't know how many games they were going to have to stack. If guys started popping, you know, more and more and it didn't really go away during the season, there were theoretically we all could have had a lot more doubleheaders, all of the teams. It ended up working out okay as far as like the testing and you know, the way that it got handled. So, it was an interesting thing though. It was definitely like co-ed softball.
But I kind of went to the season. I kind of went to the season, like hating the runner on second rule and being okay with the seven inning doubleheader rule. And at the end of the season, I was completely opposite. I hated the seven inning doubleheaders, but didn't really mind the man on second rule because I feel like we barely even saw the man on second rule the whole season.
We saw it a few times, but I just like it doesn't. For me, the man on second rule takes all the drama out of the extra innings. Like, it's not even that exciting anymore. Andrew looks at the other side of it. He's like, well, it's exciting because that guy could score. I'm like, well, okay, he's there. I know he's there. Like, he was just placed there. Like, someone just put him there. Nobody earned getting on second base. It's not fun. It's like a ground ball. Guy goes to third. That's small ball. It's not like anybody plays that anymore, but theoretically, it's not that difficult to get the runner in.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of the time, it kind of benefited us. That's why I kind of liked the rule, too, because the guy who got out the last inning is usually Tyler Wade, and he's pretty fast, so that helped us out a lot. His 170 batting average definitely played into that rule.
Yeah, this is an all Tyler Wade show. Actually, it could be.
We obviously were the Tyler Wade fan club, and I know you tried to start that back in the day.
I started it.
Okay, so you started it, and then we picked it up, not knowing that it already existed. So in turn, we also started it because we didn't know it existed. So we started to fizzle out towards the end of the season because this is the first year we actually got a good look at him starting a lot of games. Not a lot of games, but he played a lot. I'm pretty sure had like the majority of the games played like on his log, and he was pretty bad. So, I mean, he never was a hitter, but his hitting's pretty.
That's the problem with Tyler Wade. So my fandom, the reason I like him is because I love him as the last guy on the bench. I think he's an extremely valuable guy as the last guy on the bench. I don't want him playing every day. I don't want him going out there to start the games. I want him available on the bench, ready to come in to play some defense anywhere because he can play anywhere pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I'll say about him that's disappointing to me is I don't understand why he hasn't become the world's greatest bunter. Like, just master bunting. Don't hit. You can't hit. You're not going to hit. It's not going to happen. Just bunt. And just become one of those Korean...
too. Like, it'd be like a 3-1 count and he was squaring up to bunt. and just wouldn't do it.
I loved it. I loved it.
Right. But that's the thing. Like, I want him to bunt on every count. I want him to have like that much 3-0. Confidence where he'd be able to do it.
3-0 count. You want to bunt?
Yeah, bunt.
Surprise.
He's probably going to get Drew fastballs. It's going to get to a 3-2 count because nobody's scared of Tyler Wade.
He should. I mean, he should literally be training. Like, don't even go in the cage. Just bunt, or go in the cage and bunt, and like
set up targets. Set up targets. Put little hot spots. You know, like the from gym class, the little rubber hot spot things, and hit them every single time.
Just be playing pepper all day.
Yeah, if you're gonna get a nerd, we could get a nerd analysis for the accuracy of the bunting. Like, give me that. I'm here for bunting, for bunting stats.
And then he hits a home run, and he acts like everything. All the other 30 at bats where he looked like a fool, just erase after that home run. He pimps it, and he acts like he's the man.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, you know, when you hit something, it's your, when you drink your first beer, you get really excited.
Yeah, I know. I sound like I hate Tyler Wade, but I love Tyler Wade. But his bat definitely is not there. I hope that we don't have to rely on it. If it comes to the point where we have to rely on his bat, then we're in a bad situation.
Yeah, no, he needs the bunt. If we're relying on him to do anything with the bat, he needs the bunt.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, 7 innings. The extra inning rule. The expanded playoffs, obviously that's where we are now. So today was crazy just because, you know, there were so many different scenarios that were playing out. It seemed like every 5 minutes it was changing, and who was playing where, you know, and like just the games all depended on, you know, the seeding basically going to the end of it. To me, like, that's fun, I guess, if you're one of the teams getting in, like Toronto, that's cool. They're in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
That's something exciting for them. The you start seeing like teams like the Marlins, who actually had a pretty good year, but are getting in. So I think the short season helped them. The expanded playoffs helped them as well. But it didn't add that much excitement to me. Like, all these people, it was just confusing at the end because I don't know. Nobody knows where they're going to play.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so, I don't know. It seems like when they announced this, it was like this the day before the season started, I think. And they basically expanded it, making the regular season relatively meaningless because it was pretty much worthless when that many teams are in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the regular season was pretty meaningless. And to top it all off, you get home field, you don't have anybody in your stadium cheering you on. Like, I know me out there in the stands screaming my head off from the bleachers definitely helps a little bit, and like that.
At least it makes you think. As a fan.
I think I'm doing something, and they don't have that fueling them, and that's one of the main benefits of home field, and especially for a team like the Yankees, who have just such a good history of October, and just playing in the Bronx is so hard. But now anyone who comes in the Bronx, it's really not. It's just the same thing. I mean, the only benefit you get is home ballpark, the dimensions, and then now it's neutral site. So now what?
Now it doesn't matter.
Now you just get last licks. So, but in terms of the expanded playoffs as a whole, I don't mind it. And I know they're talking about doing it in the future as well. So, I mean, that's what we knew with all these rule changes, that some of them would stick around, and they're obviously not doing it just to do it for this season. They're putting them out there and feeling them, see how they just wear them, see how they are. And I think they like that one. I think they like that more teams make the playoffs. And I think the teams like it because they get playoff money. And that's obviously what they're after. So I don't know. I liked it. But down the stretch today, we had three different matchups that just kept switching, and we ended up playing the Indians. So
yeah. But the end of the day, though, like, if we didn't have expanded playoffs this season, we would be probably playing in a one game wild card game and not going into a series, which is a little bit of Yankee bias coming out of the whole situation. But for this year, I like it because we're in the playoffs and we're going to head to a 3-game series instead of a one and done game.
Right. But at the end of the day, like, if the series, I don't know, you know, you might be approaching some of these games a little differently as well, if you know that that's a situation and you're, you know, you got more on the line.
It's like
they literally, if Toronto won today, they could be playing Tampa. Like, they could have been the eighth seed. If Toronto had beaten the Orioles, the Yankees would have been the eighth seed going and playing Tampa.
Because I know we had the same record.
There was a tiebreaker head-to-head with Toronto was tied. Then you go to AL East records, and if they had beaten Baltimore today, it would have been exactly the same. And then you go to, like, interdivisional opponent winning percentage, some bullshit that just – and they had it. So, the Yankees would have been going to – to Tampa.
You know what I was saying, though? I was saying that to a few people, though. Like, I kind of wanted to see them play Tampa. I am scared of Tampa just because of how well they played us this year, but they played us when we haven't had a full team and the team's back. I mean, they haven't been playing well this week, but I mean, the week before that, they were putting up 30 runs a game and putting up football scores. So, I mean, if you go into Tampa, again, you're going not into a home field. And even if we went into the Trop, that's our home field in a regular season. So, I don't know. I'm not so worried about playing Tampa in the playoffs because I know everybody will hopefully step up to the plate. And we got Cole and playoff Tanaka. And I think the vibe will definitely get the guys going.
All right. So let's, I want to get your reactions to a few things that happened this season. And then we'll touch on kind of what's coming up with the playoffs, because there still is an opportunity to play Tampa as long as the Yankees take care of business against, you know, the Triple Crown winner of pitching stats, Shane Bieber. You know, the guy had like one of the best seasons, you know, in a long time, but shortened season. So, you know,
he could win MVP.
All right. I want to get your guys' opinions on a few things that happened this season. So, obviously, Gerrit Cole, I mean, he pitched well. He pitched very well. You know, I think we were all expecting perfection. That's not realistic, but he pitched very well. We had that little, four-game stint of him going out there and actually looking like a human being. What has come out of this is this personal catcher, or if you're asking him, personal pitcher situation with Cole and Higgy. And then, obviously, Gary Sanchez is part of this as well. So, Cole's numbers with Higgy, out of this world with Sanchez, you know, still good, but not the same. There's obviously a comfort level there. I want to hear thoughts on the personal catcher situation and if it's warranted at this point. And then also sidebar, is there a personal catcher situation? Can you call it that when your starting catcher is struggling as bad as he is? So go ahead, Luke, hit it up.
You know, I actually heard you guys talking about this in the last episode, and I agree with what you were saying. It's just like, is it really a personal catcher at the point when your starting catcher isn't hitting? And then Higgy came out that game and hit 3 home runs. So when the offensive value is where it's at, and like what Gary should be just absolutely blowing the cover off the ball, and that's why he's in the lineup. But if he's not doing that, and then the offensive value is comparable between him and Higgy, then we're not even talking about personal catchers anymore. Like
it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Let's all be very clear about that. It shouldn't be. I'm not dismissing the fact that Gary Sanchez should be much better and should be that guy.
Yeah. No, and he definitely should be, but he just hasn't been doing that. And I know it's a shortened season as well. And I still have faith in Gary a little bit. Like some part of me knows, and I know the pitcher probably approaches it that way as well. Like it's Gary Sanchez. It's not some bum up there. Like when you are a pitcher, Shane Bieber, as good as he is, you're going out there, you're facing Gary Sanchez versus Kyle Higashioka. The way you approach that at bat is still, Gary can hit one out. Gary could put one in the fucking bleachers. You know what I mean? It's just...
But see, yeah. Here's the thing. Like Shane Bieber is a pitcher. He doesn't... Yeah. He throws 95, you know, but he knows how to locate. He knows how to work that count. That's to me is like, if I'm going up against Gary Sanchez, like that guy's not seeing a fastball. Like he's probably not seeing a fastball. Probably not going to see anything on the inside of the plate either. So yeah. And
why not?
Control,
he's been chasing the ball, so why not? Yeah. Why give him a pitch to hit if he's going to swing the one in the dirt anyway?
So it's interesting. All right, so Damon, what are your thoughts? Do you like do you think it's a representative of something on Cole and why this is happening, or more of a more of a look on Gary just hasn't been performing and that's why this happened?
Yeah, I think that like so we were talking about it on the last episode and we had some stats that I pulled up and I have them here. As a screenshot just from last episode, that Cole with Sanchez, his ERA was a 3.91, and Cole with other catchers behind the dish is a 0.9 ERA. With other catchers, yeah. Which Kratz. Probably means Kratz and Higashioka. Like, I know the sample size is a little bit smaller, but that's nothing to just kind of blow past. That's a significant ERA change. And, we're going to the playoffs. Like, I'm just a firm believer in who's hot. And we're going to play a couple games. And if Gerrit Cole is throwing the way he's throwing with Higashioka behind the plate and Higgy continues to square up the ball every at bat, then why?
It doesn't even matter that he hits, honestly.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And if we're going to the playoffs, keep it that way. Keep the momentum going. I don't want to see anything change if Cole is pitching. If other people are pitching, then it's a different story because, you know, I've been saying, let's wait for Sanchez to get hot for weeks and weeks and weeks, but it could happen.
So, like, I'm saying that for 2 years.
He could get hot, hit 5 home runs in 3 games, and then we'll never know. So it's I'm always go back and forth, but I think the safe option, if Cole's pitching, I want Higgy behind the dish.
And that's always been the thing with the personal catcher thing for me too, is that if this were a personal catcher conversation, then I might say no for Higgy. But I mean, when Higgy goes out there, Higgy plays a good defensive game. And that's, we were making conversations about this halfway through this season, which is, I mean, a month ago is halfway through this season, but we were talking about it and we were saying, there are so many catchers out in the league that I honestly would kind of rather have over Gary. And everyone would on Twitter would be like, oh, but like Gary is like the, like best at his position, top 10.
Bro, 2017.
Yeah, 2017. Half. Look at Gary. Like, I mean, look at his numbers. Ago. Look at his home run numbers compared to like Mike Piazza and then in the first 100 games, all that. I get that and whatever it is. But all these other catchers, like, I mean, Christian Vasquez and all these other guys, they're catching. They catch. So,
did you say Christian Vasquez? That's who you brought up? That's the one you bring up?
Exactly. But he's like a middle of the pack guy who actually. Didn't he hit decently this year? I don't know. But he catches first and foremost. He's a catcher. And that's what Higgy does. So you know that the game isn't going to get screwed because you're going to have lit up a pass ball. And in the playoffs, that matters so much. So I'd rather have Higgy knowing that he's going to be an actual backstop than Gary just being like...
At this point, look, we have Garrett Cole going up against Bieber. You can't mess with anything at this point. Now you have to do whatever that comfort level is, it's Cole and Higgy. They have something going. You got to put that in there. You have to start the series. And that is more to me. It's more on Gary Sanchez. For whatever reason, Garrett Cole and Gary Sanchez weren't on the same page. No. You know what? Garrett Cole admit that in public? Probably not. Maybe he never will. Who knows? But my eye test is telling me, your stats are telling me that they weren't on the same page. So, I don't know. It's strange. And I agree. I don't know if it's, if you listen to the last episode, like you said, there's just it's not a catch. It's not a personal catcher situation when the starting catcher is not playing the way he's supposed to. All right. So let's move on to next thing. I think we're all expecting to see Cole Higgy on Tuesday night. If we don't, that would be a surprise. Honestly, if Boone came out and said Sanchez was starting, I would be like, okay, great. Here we go. Yeah. Boone's getting cute. Let's try to catch lightning in a bottle with Gary Sanchez. And maybe this will be his one of 20 games. All right. So MVP caliber season. We got two guys, that are up there. Voight's really, I don't think, in consideration technically really with a lot of the voters because of some of the metrics. But DJ LeMahieu and Luke Voit practically carried this season, the team for the season. I mean, Gio Urshela is in this conversation as well as far as team MVP. He was a rock at third base. Someone comes to me and says he's a bad defensive third baseman. Again, I'm going to punch him in the face because nothing that he shows is you know, representative of that. But Luke Voit is the home run king. DJ LeMahieu got the batting title. So what are your thoughts on these two guys carrying? And not only that, but, you know, DJ was gone, was down. It started the season with COVID, right? So he came, mm-hmm. was off that list to start the season. And then as well, missed a couple days because of the hand. And then Voit with the foot stuff, just playing through it the entire time. Like, yeah. I love that. What are your thoughts on those two guys? Damon, what's up?
I think that, Rail and I disagree in this throughout the entire season. So I kept saying that Luke Voit was the team MVP. And the main reason I say that is because, like you said earlier, LeMahieu was down for a little bit. And it wasn't even the fact that LeMahieu was down. It was the fact that everybody was down. And Luke Voit was the only person in the lineup that was hitting and the only person that was producing to help the team win. Like, if he was in that lineup, then we would be losing, you know, 5 straight games without him. So I think that having like his presence in the lineup throughout the entire season, his consistency and coming up in big moments and carrying the team when the team was down, I think that along with the fact that he hit 21 whatever home runs and crazy amount,
22
right, split the uprights. Yeah. I think just like all those things combined, he's a slightly better MVP in my eyes, and it's close. It's like, it's right here, you know, but in my eyes, it's Luke Voit.
Yeah. I mean, and when you look at them, there's no wrong answer. It's what you prefer. And I mean, the voters to me, when I was looking back at other MVPs, recently I feel like they've been preferring the batting average when you look at Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, for whatever you want to take with that. But when they voted, they were voting on the numbers. They liked his batting average. And when you look at DJ, did he finish above Tim Anderson? I think he did. So he won for batting average?
Yeah, he won the title.
Won the title, and then Voit won the home run title. But I'm going to go with DJ because, I mean, what I see the voters are preferring. If you're batting 364, I think he finished at, that's pretty good, especially as a leadoff guy. He's obviously not going to have the RBI numbers because he's batting leadoff, but he still managed to be that guy with runners in scoring position late in games too. So when he was given the opportunities, he was taking advantage. And I actually looked at these numbers comparing him to other guys who were in the race for MVP, like Tim Anderson, Mike Trout, Jose Abreu, Nelson Cruz, not Shane Bieber, because I don't know how to compare those numbers, and I don't know how voters will either.
War, you look at war.
Yeah, and that's basically it. But when you look at the other numbers, I looked at like who led categories, like main categories, such as like batting average, home runs, RBIs, war, other stuff. But DJ, out of all the lists of players I just named, he led in 5 of the 8 categories I have against everybody. And that's pretty good. He just didn't lead in home runs and RBIs. And he led in WOBA, OPS.
He's a leadoff hitter, yeah.
Weighted runs created plus, OBP, batting average. He led in all those, but then it's, again, what you prefer. But I think the main person he's going up against is Jose Abreu. That dude had a pretty good season, I'd say, because he had the numbers that were similar to Voit's power, but he also hit 330. So I think if DJ's going to lose to anybody, I'd give it to Abreu. Or Bieber, yeah. If you want to compare that, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know how they're going to. I mean, if you look at the percentage of games that he won or started to, it was something crazy. We looked it up. I think it was, he was in 10 or 11 of the game of 60 games he had, you know, a marked influence on. Yeah. So it was a significant amount of the games that he had an influence on. The one thing that, so I'm looking at MVP at least, like LeMahieu's got to be up there with the talks. I don't think Voit's defense plays into it, and I think it kills him in these talks.
Yeah.
He was there when you're talking about league MVP and when you're talking about team MVP and the guy that's most valuable rather than the guy who has the highest stats, because that's usually what it goes to. They're both right there for this team. But Voit, I think playing through the foot injury, you know, just being that durable guy out there. I ate complete shit talking about him losing his job at some point because
I'm the biggest Voit hater in the beginning.
I was there too.
It's not that I didn't like him. I thought what I saw at the end of last year with Ford, I thought that there was something happening there and that he was going to get more time and he was going to take advantage of it. That didn't happen.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
Fine. It's fine. I've been wrong twice before. So
I said Miggy was going to take the starting third base job by the start of the playoffs.
That's just dumb.
I don't know. I had faith that old Miggy would come around, but he didn't. So
old Miggy still couldn't play third base.
Yeah, I know. I was just hoping that he would figure it out and he didn't.
But yeah, I mean, LeMahieu. All right, so here, this begs the question now. What are you guys thinking? And realistically here, we're walking into an offseason now with, I'm going to ask two more offseason questions before we wrap this up. But LeMahieu obviously is a free agent. I mean, the guy is the freaking, I called him the spine. He's like he is the backbone of this team.
It's true.
How much money do you give him? What is the contract? I mean, have you guys talked about this on the show? Like, what are you thinking a realistic contract for DJ LeMahieu is? And he's talked about it. They were asking him today on the Zoom calls. And he kept saying, like, I've said this before. I want to be here. I want to be here. We'll see how free agency plays. I believe him. We'll see. He's a nice guy. I don't know if he wants to take a hometown discount or he shouldn't.
He absolutely shouldn't. I mean, he's been the most consistent player on this team. And he's the type of player that I'm sick of the home runner bust. I want to start building a team. I'm obviously not building the team, but I want to root for a team that does what DJ does. If we had 9 DJs, I know nobody, that would never happen. But if we had 9 players of DJ's essence, like a guy who will just put the ball in play, I'm so cool with that. Like the Royals, when they won the World Series, I want that. I want the small ball. I want to hit the ball. I want to just put it in play. I don't want the strikeouts. Obviously, we're going to have to deal with that because Stanton's under a long contract and Judge is probably going to stay with us. I know JJ is trying to offload him, but he's probably going to be a Yankee. I mean, amid the Judge's chambers, but I don't know. I think in terms of DJ's contract, I'm backing up anything for him. If he asks for any amount, just give it to him. Because if we don't, another team will, and we have more money than any other team. So why don't we just give it to him? I don't know how many years he's going to ask for, and that's probably going to be evidently the deciding factor. He's probably going to want something closer to the 5-6 range. I know he's up there in age. How old is he?
32,
yeah.
So how many years do you think he'll ask for? Because that's a determinant of how much he gets per year.
I mean, I think the contract's probably going to be 5 years. Yeah, I think it's a,
what I was
it's
thinking.
A, so what are you shaking your head at? I said 5-6.
Yeah. No. I'm agreeing. I think it's going to be about that. I could even see a 6-year option. I'm not disagreeing with that.
Yeah.
I'm shaking my head probably in agreement. I'm saying that my thought is like, that's the kind of guy, DJ LeMahieu is the kind of guy who can actually get old and still be productive.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't need to hit the ball over the fence to be a productive baseball player.
Like, yeah, he's like Ichiro.
He'll just make those adjustments.
He will make adjustments. I have full confidence he will make adjustments.
Flick the ball wherever he wants to put it. And if
the only thing that could bring him down is his eyesight. And his eyesight's not going to go that bad when he goes from 32 to 34. I mean, I'm 23. My eyes are pretty good. I don't know year to year.
No, I've been there. Dude, I've done this. The eyes don't change in that time. The eyes don't.
Exactly. Least, I feel like that goes down the road.
Yeah. I mean, you can get glasses too. Glasses, you know, help.
Labor got glasses. Actually, I want to bring that up because we talked about
they're just frames.
I know. Yeah, no, frames. But I think I talked about this with Andrew, but I remember we brought you on the show originally before we came on with Bronx Pinstripes, and that was one of the questions I asked you. It's like, what do you think of goggles Glaber, rec spec Glaber?
Rec specs, yeah.
We were the early adopters to that. We called it out, but I said to Andrew in our roll call Glaber episode that they aren't prescription. They were like, why would it not be prescription? They're not prescription,
yeah.
So.
He said,
look good, feel good, play good. Yeah. That's what he said.
Everyone was making fun of me. He was like, why would he do that, Rello? You're crazy. He's like, he literally just wants to look good. And he does.
Yeah, so. And he says that. So he owns that part of it. It's okay.
No, it's sick and it works.
Yeah. I wear rec specs when I play softball. It's fine. They're not prescription either. I'm just trying to protect my eyes so that I don't lose vision.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So Damon, what are you thinking? What do they say no to? Do they say no to him in any capacity, or is it basically he puts himself out there and then someone just offers him the moon?
I don't know how you can say no to the guy. I really don't. And I think again, I think 5 years is pretty solid. I think that's like, I'd be cool with that, but literally like the way he's played the spine, that's a great like analogy, like because he is this person that holds the entire lineup together, and we've seen it this season and last season, he is just a production machine. I don't see them saying no, and if they do say no, then I don't know. I feel like DJ's a nice guy. I don't think he's gonna ask for this a $300 million contract.
I'm gonna be pissed. This is gonna be the first time that I'm gonna be in a long time that I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna be pissed off if they don't sign this guy, because there's no reason for them not to.
He might be too humble to be like, give me more money. You just like,
No. Everybody keeps saying that.
His agent will take care of that.
Yeah, exactly.
But
is he a Boris guy?
I don't think so. I'd
be shocked.
I would be shocked. I don't know who his agent is.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I need to look it up, but I don't. I would be very surprised if that were the case. I just have a feeling that the only reason I would be okay with him leaving at this point is if it was his decision, he just didn't want to play here. And I don't think that's the case.
Which is not
the case. But if that is the case and that's the reason, and the Yankees had, you know, nothing out of their control at that point, that's the only reason I will be okay with it. And I still won't be okay with it, but I would be like, why didn't you make it a better situation for him that he wanted to be here?
I want to be so pissed off, because if we don't have him next year in a full season and he goes to some other team and he starts tearing it up.
Oh, he's just going to.
Because he's going
he
to.
Will
I
be,
know.
He will be picked so quickly if we let him go to free agency.
Who's our leadoff guy? And like another team that doesn't have the money that we have. We have the most money out of any team. And if we don't pay him, that means that somebody else outbid us, and what are we doing at that point? Like, why are we not being the Yankees? Then it's just how at that point, just being cheap.
But like, again, like the fact that we have so many big hitters who are these home run guys throughout the whole lineup, we need a guy like DJ in the lineup, and we need a guy who can hit for average. And if we're looking for a guy to hit for average, he's the guy, the batting title of the year, right?
And like, somebody who can play too.
And someone who can actually play. Like, we need that guy to break the lineup up.
Yeah. And the only thing that kept him off the field was Corona, and that didn't even keep him off the field for that long. Yeah. So,
and he didn't have symptoms. He was just tested. Yeah. It was positive. He wasn't even sick.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that if it was up to him, when he had that little thumb thing, he would have cut his thumb off to play.
Yeah.
He would have had it. I mean, he's the Ronnie Lott who like goes in there and just like chop it off. Like, yeah, I'll go. I don't need that.
I'd have confidence in him with one arm.
I would too. I would love it. All right. We got playoffs coming up. The obviously Tuesday is going to be Cole Bieber. I mean, that's an A+ matchup. You cannot get better than that. Yankees need to make some actual contact. It could be a 1-0, 2-0. It could be a very low scoring game. Cole has given up some home runs. Usually it's when there's nobody on, he's more aggressive, but this is the type of game where that will matter because you're going up against a guy like Shane Bieber. So no days off, potential bubble if they do get past Cleveland. The bracket is the bracket. There's no reseeding. There's just a lot of like, this is what it is, you know, deal with it type of playoff situations. What are your thoughts now going into Cleveland, into a Cole Bieber game one, and then it looks like it's going to be Carrasco and Tanaka game two.
I mean, that's what you want game one. Like that better be prime time. That's not what you want for the Yankees. You're obviously going against a potential MVP there. But
as a baseball fan,
that better be prime time. That better not be just that. That better be the main stage there tonight and that night. And I mean, Gerrit Cole, he finished off the season pitching out of his mind when you watch that. I mean, he had a few shaky starts, but he finished the season sub-3 ERA. I think it was like 2.8. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want. And Gerrit Cole, you know he's going to turn it on in the playoffs. We faced him in the playoffs, and he rocked us. I mean, he's a guy who just gets so into it. He's so meticulous about everything. And then you have another guy in Tanaka who is also that way, and he notoriously turns it on. You see like the graphics they put on the broadcast and him compared to some of these amazing pitchers who are like Hall of Fame pitchers. And he's in conversation with them because he has like a 1.7 ERA in the postseason. And if it's a 3-game series and you got two of those guys right there to lead us off, it might not go 3. I'm pretty confident that we could take one home before we get to the third. And then we don't even have to talk about a Devi Garcia being the third. That's how confident I am. I know the Indians are good and they've been hot recently, but I mean, this team has some of the best bats in baseball and 1-9. And all they need to do is be hot. And if they can turn it on, I think just it being October
against
1st.
Against the best pitcher in baseball
right
now.
It's a big if.
I get it. But I think it being October 1st and just that crisp fall air, you get a pumpkin spice in you in the morning.
Until they win and go to Texas for the bubble.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, just watch like a Christmas movie before you start or something, or the Halloween, something to get you in the mode that it's October.
Just throw a hoodie on.
I think that will get them just like to click and like, hey, it's October now. Like, obviously these last few games didn't really matter and we knew it. Obviously they knew it too. It was against the Marlins too. Like, it doesn't matter. I think when it comes time to like actually get down to business, I think we'll turn it on.
Yeah. I hope they're turning the switch on like you think they are, but
I hope so.
I am watching Gerrit Cole pitch the last two games were really fun because that guy, you could tell the difference between that game and the first couple games he pitched. Just how locked in he was. He was throwing pitches, getting right back. He had his rhythm going, went back to the dugout. Like no one was talking to him. And that was like, he was just automatic. He was on a mission those last two games. And I feel that's just going to be even more in the first game of the postseason. I'm not worried about Gerrit Cole. I'm more worried about our bats waking up and producing.
That's the thing.
It's just been so streaky. And I want to be this guy who's just like, yeah, we'll turn it on. But at the end of the day, you can't just turn on hitting a baseball. You can't just get hyped and get energized and go hit somebody. You need to actually hit a baseball. So it's a little bit different. But
the over-under in that game is going to be like 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hammer the under.
It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight. All right, boys. Thanks for coming on. Yeah, this is going to be interesting. I do feel good if we can get past Cleveland. Like that's some momentum building. Now you go down. Now you go into this bubble situation where anything goes. You got all the talent in the world. Crazier things have happened. Maybe you see Tampa down there. we'll see what happens. I would love to see that in the ALCS. That would be great. And then moving on, someone's going to win this thing. Might as well be us, right?
Why not?
Thanks for coming on, boys. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks for having us. Go Yanks.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.